one of the more challenging and striking and agathists that I think we've ever learned. In some ways it's very difficult, and some of you may be familiar with it. Miles said he encountered it, and Rashi and Sukkah brought it down, and those of you who finished Baba Kama, this is the very end of Baba Kama, so you may have seen it there. Not sure how widely known it is, but it's an absolutely astonishing agathah, and I want to introduce it by reminding you of something I've said numerous times in the past, which is that it is presumptuous of us to even begin to think that we can enter into the mind and person of such great gedolim as Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Kahana, whom we will be learning about here. Aside from the fact that they are infinitely greater than we are, they are also we're also separated by a huge amount of time, culture, space. So I make no assumptions about whether I'm getting Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Kahana right. I'm not even trying to do that. What I'm trying to do is interpret the Gemara. In other words, the Mesadrei HaGemara wrote this Agadah, and they wrote it to convey a message to us. And so my goal is to try to understand what that message is. That's very different from understanding who Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Kahana truly were. How could we imagine that? They were so great. But the author of this Agadah did want to teach us something, otherwise he wouldn't have included it in the Gemara. So we're trying to figure out what he wanted to teach us about Rav Kahana and Rabbi Yochanan, not what Rav Kahana and Rabbi Yochanan were themselves like. It's a very, very important point, and we need to be very modest about our aspirations as we learn this very, very striking Gemara. It starts with, just as a preview, it starts with Rav Kahana's breaking somebody's neck. It ends in the middle of it. Rabbi Yochanan more or less kills or is responsible for the death of Rav Kahana, and then it concludes with an enigmatic encounter between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Kahana in a cave where Rav Kahana was buried, which is protected by a magical kind of snake that doesn't allow Rabbi Yochanan in until Rabbi Yochanan gets the code. So this is a really, really striking Agadah. I think it's very profound, as all Agadah. Everything in the Gemara is, you know, these are Divrei Elokim Chaim. Everything in the Gemara has great depth of meaning. We're going to try to figure out this Agadah, but just off the superficially, it's an absolutely astonishing Agadah. So we need to try to figure it out. I will cite some Mefarshim as we go along. I will also, of course, try to do my best to figure out how I understand this Gemara. So, let's begin. It's marked off in your Gemara. It's Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. The end of Baba Kama. Everybody have it? Ahu Gavra Tahava Boy Achvuye Ativna Dechavre. There was a man who wanted to show the wheat of his friend to governmental authorities. Kind of like a Moshe. Asalakami to Rav. So he came before Rav to get his rabbinical approbation. Is it okay to do this? It's not clear to me why he went to Rav, but he went to him. So Rav says, Amale lo tachve velo tachve. Do not show him. Do not show him. He repeats it twice. And just from a literary perspective, you will find that there are many, many words in this Agadah are repeated twice. Not sure why that is, worth thinking about, but this is repeated twice. Don't show him, don't. That's obviously for emphasis. Don't do it. Right? I can't make it clear enough, mister. Don't do it. Amale, machvina o machvina. Well, I will show it, and I will show it. So he mimics Rav's double negation with a double affirmation. You say don't, I say I will. Given that, it's hard to understand exactly why he came to Rav in the first place, since he obviously didn't care too much what Rav says, so I don't really have...
He was hoping he would say yes, so he could say I'm using my rabbinic authority.
Yeah, maybe. It could be. Okay, it could be. Yeah, maybe. Although it's hard to... Okay, could be. Anyway, so, Yosef Rav Kahana kamei to Rav. Rav Kahana happened to have been sitting before Rav. Rav was the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Kahana was a Talmud in Rav's Yeshiva, is one of the Chevra there. And he was sitting before him. Shamtua lukuye mine. He broke his neck. Rav Kahana just went and creamed the guy. Broke his neck. Which is a pretty aggressive thing to do. So why do you think he did that?
Well, I mean, everyone is in Al-Malacha, an informer is like just as bad as a murderer.
Excuse me?
When in Al-Malacha, an informer is just pretty much a murderer because they're trying to basically get people in charge of the government. That does lead to
good.
Death in the prison.
So at one level, and I think that's a very, very good point, Rav Kahana took the view that he was a rodef. A moser is a rodef. And that's actually, as we'll see, Rav's response to Rav Kahana's hyper-aggressive behavior is exactly that. That if you get the Goyim involved, then you are endangering this person's life. You want to do it. You're a rodef. You know, a rodef, you have to kill. You have to prevent him from the redifa so that he doesn't cause the death of somebody else. Yes.
Did he paskin this in front of his Rebbe?
Ah, so that's another issue. Very, very good point. I think that's going to be part of the
he was being
subtext. On the one hand, right, one answer you gave for me is rodef, but there's another answer, which is that this guy is a chutzpah, you know, Rav says no, and he says yes. Like, what is that? So, at another level, part of what he's doing is he is defending the honor of the, not only his personal Rebbe, Rav, but Rav, who was the greatest Talmud Chacham, perhaps, of his era, Rabel. So, there's also an element of standing up for your Rebbe. So, that's a part of it. He was being moches, so to speak, and he was, this is Echil Hashem, how could you do this to the great Rav, like, blow him off. So that's another part of it. And that, Rav doesn't allude to that, but that could be another factor. Yes?
According to the first Peshattah, when I gave, for example, the Rav Kahana also passing in from his Rebbe, Rav didn't say this guy needs Misa, and he goes ahead and does a Misa.
Right, so that's actually exactly what Mendy said, and that is an issue. It's Mora Halacha Lefnei Rabbo. It's usher to be Mora Halacha Lefnei Rabbo. If your Rebbe is there, somebody, you're sitting in a room and somebody asks your Rebbe a Shaila, you can't pop up and say, here's what the tshuva is, because that's also chutzpah. So that's part of the dynamic here. It's subtext, doesn't mention explicitly, but it's definitely an issue. And I think it's a factor in what Rav eventually tells Rav Kahana. So let's see how the Gadita continues to unfold. So Kari Rav Iluya, Rav read or said about Rav Kahana's behavior. Banecha ulfu v'shachvu barosh kol chutzos. Your children. This is a quote from a pasuk in Yeshayahu. Your children fainted and are lying on the head of every courtyard. Ketav michmar, like a trapped antelope. Ma tav zek kivan shenafal b'michmar ein merachlim alav. Just as when an antelope is trapped, the owners of the trap will not be merciful on the antelope, but they will eat it or do whatever they do with antelopes. Af mamon shel Yisrael, mamon shel Yisrael, kevan shenafal biyat akum, once it falls into the hands of pagans, ovdei kachavim, ein merachamim alav. What is the meaning of the term alav?
The goyim are not going to have mercy on the yidden.
The Jew. Exactly. It's not the money. Just, in other words, what he's saying is, if you are Moser, then the person you are Moser is at risk of life. Because just like the owners of the trap, one of Rachmanis on the antelope, a Jew who is given over to the Akum is like trapped, like the antelope, and the antelope will be killed, so too the Jew will be killed. So basically, he is defending Rav Kahana's position, and this is exactly what you were saying before. He's like a rodent, and so he defends it. But let's see how it continues before we analyze it. Amalei Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana, Amalei, he said to him, Rav Kahana, Ada idna havu parsai. Until now, there were Persians who ruled our land. Delo kapte ashvichus damit, who weren't so careful about murder. They would let murderers slide. Bahashta ika yivani, but now that our land is ruled by Yivanim, dekaptu ashvichas damim, who are very, very makbid, who are very careful and rigorous about murderers and their punishment. So, Amre, they will say, Mardin, Mardin, murderer, murderer. By the way, notice the similarity in the words. Greek, Mardin, Mardin's Greek. Right. Murder, same, you know, the English word comes from the Greek. Kum, so Rav told him, you're at risk of your life. Now that you killed somebody, the authorities might arrest you, try you, and in turn punish you with death. Kum sakli aradi Yisrael, go I'll take a question, I'll just finish this. Kum sakli aradi Yisrael, go travel to Eretz Yisrael, because he's in bubble now. Rav is in bubble. The kabel alach, and accept upon yourself, d'lo tikshe l'Rab Yochanan sheva shnin, that you don't ask any questions of Rab Yochanan, your new Rosh Yeshiva, for 7 years. So let me explain this, and then I'll take your questions. So, Rav was the leading Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel, and Rav Yochanan was the leading Rosh Yeshiva. Where anybody know where Rav Yochanan was based? Teveria. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Teveria, and he was the leading Talmud Chacham of his era in Eretz Yisrael. And so, what he told Rav Kahana was be Gola, going to Golas, leave Bavel, go to Eretz Yisrael, and where does a great Talmud Chacham go? He goes to the yeshiva. So he went to the top yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael and to Rav Yochanan's yeshiva. But you must accept upon yourself that you will not ask Rav Yochanan any questions for 7 years. That's pretty interesting. So let's figure out what this is all about. So on the one hand, Rav supports Rav Kahana's decision on grounds of Rodeif, so he paskin. And he's right. But he tells him to go into Golas. So, if it were just a matter of Golas to escape the Greek authorities, what's this with the keeping silent with Rabbi Yochanan?
Again, it was that he, the whole idea that when he made this psak, when he just decided on this very rash decision, this very decision that carried many consequences, he didn't think forward, and that's one thing that usually when you ask a Rebbe, it can help, you know, they can think forward to future consequences that, you know, again, it wasn't the Rodef part he would have been totally right on. But the part that you're committing murder in a, you know, land controlled by guy where there, you know, other laws, you know, was something he didn't think about. He said, you know, go to yeshiva and, you know, don't, you know, the whole idea of asking a Rebbe who could, you know, clarify this for you, you have to probably, maybe either you have to figure this out for yourself, you don't get any quick answers, or that's the punishment because you didn't ask your Rebbe. You can't ask a Rebbe for 7 years.
Okay, I think the latter is probably more on target, and I'm going to develop the idea a little further. But you didn't ask me, Ashila, so you keep quiet for 7 years. I think it's much more than that, but I think that's a good beginning, and thank you, Ben. Yes, Ben.
I have like two possibilities. One, I would say kind of what he said, but very, very practically speaking, I don't know how much I 100% buy this, but I think it is practical, is you, when he's going into Golos, he's running away trying to escape authority, don't make yourself known. Meaning, if people hear, like, wow, there's this new guy who just came in from Babel, and he's been rocking up this year, where did he come? Just after this incident happened, like, I got murdered, make yourself known, it's not a good idea. So when he's going to a new place to escape the authority, don't become known in the next place you
come. Interesting thought.
It's a low profile, but otherwise I would say that, you know, learn what it means to listen to a rabbi, even if you disagree with him. Don't give up stock because you were too zealous here.
Yeah, okay. There's a lot more to it than this, but let me hear Miles.
Could you say, like, a Rebbe knows his Talmud very well? I mean, especially Rav Kahana and Rav were probably, like, very close.
Yeah.
So I knew what you did. Like, I knew where you were coming from, and that's why, you know, I don't want to say, like, you didn't have to ask for shush, but going to a new place where, you know, the new Rav is not necessarily going to know you, he might interpret your actions a little bit differently.
Okay, that's getting closer to where I want to go with this, and I'll explain in a minute. Yes?
No, I'd like to debunk his theory about the practicality, saying if you're going to go and want to stay to a profile, why are you going to the top yeshiva?
I wouldn't overstate this whole thing. They didn't have extradition treaties. Like, it's not as if Bubba and everybody knew what was going on. Like, I don't know about that. I think the issue is a more... I think Rob was giving Musar to Rav Kahana. And one part of the Musar has been, and Mendy has said, is, you know, you should allow your Rav to say what he has to say before you jump in. But there's much more to it than that. And what's much more about it comes out later in the Agadita, which we'll see vividly, but Rav Kahana was a very aggressive Moksha. He was not your laid-back Talmud who, you know, sits in a chair and, like, doesn't say a word. He was super aggressive. Every time his Rebbe said something, boom, 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 boom. It's like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish that I got into, we didn't, you know, some years ago, where, you know, every time Rabbi Yochanan said something, Reish Lakish would ask him 24 kashas. Remember that, I got it to? Bab Mitzia, and then Rabbi Yochanan would give 24 different answers, and Rav Kodesh Shmaitza. Reish Lakish was very aggressive. And by the way, we know that from his previous career. He used to be a...
Bandit.
Yeah, bandit, enlisted, or gladiator. According to some versions, gladiator. You know what those guys do?
They're aggressive.
They're pretty aggressive. They fight animals. So Reish Lakish was very, very aggressive by personality. He channeled that aggressiveness to becoming an incredible Gadol Bator, which is a general Musar Haskel that you can take whatever midos you have, good, bad, or indifferent, and you can channel them to productive purposes. And Rav Kahana was quite aggressive in the way he... First of all, look, he killed somebody. That's pretty aggressive right off the bat, right? But even his mode of learning was aggressive. And here I want to call attention to a cultural difference between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, which I think, as we learn the Agarita, becomes a pivotal in understanding some of the deeper issues here. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Talmidei Chachamim in Bavel are mechablim zeh v'zeh b'halacha, whereas Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael are nochim zeh v'zeh. So, mechablim, what does that mean? What's
it?
Yeah, they hurt each other. What is the Hebrew word, by the way, nowadays for terrorists? Same word.
Abel.
Yeah, same word. And they were terroristic. They were pugilistic in the way they learned. Kasha Teretz! You go into the base medrash and Bavel, and they would argue back and forth. No, 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 you're wrong. No, you're wrong. They're very, very aggressive in their learning style.
They scream like a raven about this.
Very, very, and that was their mode of learning. They were very, and there was very Kasha Teretz, Kasha Teretz. Eretz Yisrael, they were nochem, you know, they were much more tolerant, they didn't yell and scream and argue 100 times over, they were much less argumentative, they were more nochem. Times have changed, I know. Very true.
I heard that's the reason why the Talmud Yerushalmi...
Exactly. The Talmud Yerushalmi is shorter than the Talmud Bavli. The Talmud Bavli is full of all the dialectical arguments of all the Amorayim, or the Tanayim, the Amorayim, because they were arguing a lot, so there was much more material. Whereas the Talmud Yerushalmi is nochem zeh v'zeh v'halacha, there was less argument. The Talmud Yerushalmi is much shorter because there weren't as many arguments. So here you have Rav Kahana kind of like epitomizes the style of learning of Bavel. And by the way, different yeshivas are like that. I mean, you know, some Lipsh yeshivas are very, very aggressive and yelling and screaming. You go to the base, you can't hear yourself. Some are, you know, quieter and a little bit more passive. So they're different styles, different Darkei Alim, but in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael are that. So Rav Kahana represented the epitome of this aggressiveness. And I'll give you another example of this aggressiveness. You all know this because it's like so famous, but you may not remember about whom it was said. Gemara in the end of Brachas, I think Samach Bey, if I'm not mistaken, Gemara in the end of Brachas says that Rav Kahana went under his Rebbe's bed while he was having relations with his wife, because he wanted to, you know, see how it should be done. His Rebbe said, what is this? And he said, well, Torahi, you know, I need to learn. Now that's also a very intrusive, you might say, aggressive kind of thing to do. You know, it's a pretty intimate moment, and to hide under the bed while they're having relations, it's like, whoa. But that was Rav Kahana's style. He was very forceful, very intrusive, very aggressive. And that comes out, again, I want to step back and remind you, I don't know anything directly about Rav Kahana. I'm just, as I said earlier, maybe he was a very sweet, you know, man, I don't know. But what emerges in this Agadot is a particular portrait that I'm working with, okay? So this is the Masadre HaGemara's view of Rav Kahana. And so what Rav was telling him to do was not go into Gullus to save his life, but go into Gullus as a kind of kapara. And not just a kapara, but a process of remaking himself. Rav didn't want to necessarily change the Kahan entirely, but felt he needed to go on an odyssey, a journey of self-improvement in which he would discipline himself to be a better person than he was. So he supports his position, but nevertheless, he feels that his Talmud needs a new way of engaging the world that would be more receptive, more modest, less aggressive. As Ben said, think things through more, you know, work it out. So he's on a journey of moral self-improvement that Rav sense about. So that's what happens. And this is a turning point in the Agadita, because now Rav leaves entirely, and he's replaced by Rabbi Yochanan. So, in many ways, the Agadita is about the tensions between a Rebbe and a Talmud, which, by the way, is a motif in many, many Agaditas. Why? Because the Gemara was taught by Rebbeim to Talmidim. So this was their life. Their life was a life of mentoring Talmidim. And so the Agaditas, which tell of that life, tell of rivalries and tensions between great Rebbeim and Talmidim who have great potential, but maybe problematic along their journey towards godless. And so now we have a shift in Rebbe from Rav in Bavel to Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. So they got it to continue. Azel, Ashkechei l'Reish Lakish, D'yashiv v'kamesayim esifta d'yoma l'Rabbana. This is really a beautiful. We enter into the yeshiva of Rabbi Yochanan. Like, what was it like to be in Rabbi Yochanan's yeshiva? I think that's pretty interesting, right? So we kind of enter into the scene, and here's what he finds. Reish Lakish is sitting, and he's reviewing the shiurim of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, to the Talmidim. He was a choser. Do we have them? I think we have. Do we have any? I think we have. We used to have that. Parnas had somebody a rabbi. Yeah. So he repeated the shiurim of. It was very advanced shiur. Not all the Talmidim understand. So he would repeat and explain the shiurim of his Rebbe. Now, at this point, they were like a. He was like a Talmud chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. You know, he started out, you may remember the Agadah, he started out as a gladiator, Rabbi Yochanan made him, and they became great combatants in Halacha, and they were very close, and he was like almost like the co-Rosh Yeshiva to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was still the Rosh Yeshiva, and Reish Lakish was sort of like almost like the co-Rosh Yeshiva. What?
This is Rav Kahana's loophole. Can't go ask Rabbi Yochanan any questions.
No, that's actually an interesting thought, but it doesn't go that way. It's not the way it goes. So we got into the yeshiva. Rabbi Yochanan has already finished his year. He's gone home to learn more, no doubt, or to rest, because he was an elderly man at this point. And Reish Lakish is reviewing the shiur. You imagine this, kind of picture it in your mind. Here's the yeshiva. Reish Lakish just finishes the shiur, and he Reish Lakish is on the way up. He just finished repeating the shiur, and it continues as follows. So he sees the Talmidim standing around. Amar lu Reish Lakish hecha. Where's Reish Lakish? Amar lu amai. Good Jewish answer. You always answer a question with another question. Like, why do you want to know where Reish Lakish is? There was this new person who comes from Babel. So I don't know, you know, he was a little, maybe dressed a little differently or sounded a little differently. I don't know, his language was probably not the same. So, like, who is this guy? There's a little suspicion about, and well-founded suspicion, as it turns out, but they're very careful, which I find interesting. Like, a new guy walks into the Beis Medrash here, I would hope we all shalom lechem, welcome him, say hello, right? That's what we should do, right? But there's a certain suspiciousness on the part of these talmidim. Am I? Amar lahu, so he said to him, to them, Hi Kushya, Vahai Kushya. He heard the shir. that Rish Lakish was repeating. I have this question and this question. V'hai peruka, v'hai peruka. And I have this teretz and that teretz. Basically, he showed off his brilliance. Like, he wasn't learning the sugya. This reminds me a little like a like Rabbi Sachs, you know, who comes into any yeshiva anywhere. Oh, is that what you're learning? If I'm a staff kuftes? Okay, well, do you know the Rajba and the Rush and, you know, the Rabbi Kivager and this and that? I mean, and, you know, and the Davra Maskil, Dav such and such, you know. So, you know, Reish Lakish here, obviously that's what Rabbi Sachs is doing. He's a Rebbe, but Reish Lakish, but Rav Kana had the same brilliance, that same incredible knowledge, and boom, he's right in there, asking Kashis and Tirutsim on the shir that he didn't even know what they were learning from. So, that's a little destabilizing, right? You have a shir, you know, who's up top, who's the middle, who's the bottom, who's the magen shir, you know, everything kind of works. There's a hierarchy in yeshiva. But now we have this brilliant Talmid Chacham, apparently from Bavel, who is going to destabilize the entire institution. Amru Leil Reish Lakish. So, the Talmidim now go to Reish Lakish's house and let him know what's going on. Ozel Reish Lakish.
They went to his house.
Or wherever he was. The Talmidim found Reish Lakish. I don't know where he was, but they went to wherever he was. I just said his house. It doesn't say his house, but they went to Reish Lakish. You know, he's no longer in the base. So now, in turn, Ozel Reish Lakish, this is really interesting. Reish Lakish goes, Amulei the Rabbi Yochanan. He now goes to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, Ari Allah mi Bavel. This lion has just made aliyah from Bavel. La'ayin bar b'mesifta d'lamachar. Better prepare your shear well tomorrow. Isn't it interesting? La'ayin mar b'mesifta. You better really make sure you have it totally worked out. Because there is this brilliant, genius, new Talmud Chacham from Bavel, full of questions, full of answers. You need to be totally prepared. You can't rely on, you know, your old shear notes, you know, for preparing the shear. I'm sure Yochanan didn't do that. I'm speaking, you know, hyperbolically, but, you know, you really, really need to make sure you're ready for this Arimi Bavel. It's interesting because, you know, you can have a great Rosh Hashiva or Mahavdil, a great professor, you know, somebody who's a great expert in an area, and somebody comes, he says, all of a sudden bombs you with questions, and you know you really need to be prepared for it. And even if you have, you know, your regular preparations, and I'm sure Yochanan kind of prepared for a shear, you know, but they may not be sufficient if you have this like aggressive, brilliant Talmid Chacham who knows an immense amount. You really need to prepare. And there's a kind of, and this is I think one of the key avenues into this Agadita, there is a, I might say, you might even say, an inherent rivalry or tension between a great Rebbe and a very, very talented, aggressive Talmud. It's, you know, what's the borderline between asking a kasha respectfully and asking a kasha aggressively? When is the kasha lishma, and when is the kasha an expression of hubris, of arrogance? You know, you can have a Talmud who's really arrogant in the way he asks questions. And how does a Rebbe respond to a Talmud who should be a bit more modest? You know, I know this as a, you know, teacher myself. You know, you have students and sometimes they ask questions that are just annoying. You know, they just really seem annoying to you. And where is the question coming from? And sometimes you have a brilliant student who really knows so much and you have to make sure you're on the top of your game when you teach that. I've had that. You know, I've taught graduate classes and really terrific, terrific students, and you really need to make sure you're on top of your game because they'll catch you if you're not. And there's a tension. Not necessarily an unhealthy one. It could be unhealthy. It would be healthy. But there's a tension, and that's what this I got into in part is exploring. Yes.
So an interesting thing that, you know, Rebbe mentioned that Reish Lakish himself had that similar Bavel type of attitude, that similar line. It's very interesting for him to call Rav Kahana, this new guy, oh, is a line coming up from Bavel, this aggressiveness. Right. And first of all, we already know that Rabbi Yochanan has a lot of practice dealing with Reish Lakish, who is this aggressive learner, right? Sure. So it's very interesting for an aggressive learner to come say, hey, this guy who I've just heard about is very aggressive.
Imagine how aggressive he must have been if Rish Lakish called him an Ari.
After just hearing about it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So he must have been really... Let the guy... Rav Kahana broke somebody's neck. There's a certain, you know, power to that. And that comes across even in, you know, argumentation in the base. You know, I'm sure you know. You've seen chavrusas, you've seen guys in the base matters. They're super aggressive when they ask a kasha, you know. Apparently that's what Rav Kahana was like. Okay, so let's continue. Osvuhe, now this is another fascinating picture of the Beis Medrash of a yeshiva of Rabbi Yochanan. You know, we learn so much about Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, a daf doesn't go by without Rabbi Yochanan, almost in Shas. What was his yeshiva like? So here's a little picture of the yeshiva. Very interesting to me. So it goes as follows. Osvuha bedora kama kameid Rabbi Yochanan. There were 7 rows of students, and the rows were hierarchically determined. Top Talmidim sat in the front. Rish Lakish sat more or less next to Rabbi Yochanan. Then you row. The beginners were all the way in the back, the weakest Talmidim. The very top Talmidim sat all the way up front. That's kind of interesting. It gets even more interesting, as you'll see in a minute. But for starters, that's interesting. And they already assessed Rav Kahana as being... first row. So look how this is not a chilled environment in the sense that as soon as somebody comes in, he's already given a bechina, he's placed, here's where you sit. Now let's listen to how this develops. This is really astonishing.
So Pastor Gamliel was past Rabbi Gamliel's time, right?
Yeah, sure, way past. Centuries past. So, Omar Schmeitzer, Rabbi Yochanan taught his Schmeitzer, his teaching, V'lo Ikshe. Rabbi Yochanan was quiet. Why? Because the Gezer Rav told him to be quiet. Schmeitzer said another teaching, V'lo Ikshe. Anach de Achura Sheva Dore Ade Usve Bedora Basra. He got demoted. One teaching didn't say a word, back one row. Another teaching, Rav Kahana didn't say a word, back another row. Another teaching, Rav Kahana didn't say a word, back another row. Until he got demoted in that very shear to the last row. Now, what does it tell you about the dynamics of Rav Yochanan's Beis Medrash?
Well, even though there were only
7 rows, but...
Very competitive.
Competitive. It's like... You know,
that's why he was sent to Rabbi Yochanan's yeshiva versus other yeshivas. You know, it's when you're coming. You know, we described Eretz Yisrael as
the best yeshiva.
I'm saying we're also describing. You know, it seems like it has a little touch of that bubble, that competitiveness.
Yeah,
yes,
that's true. But they were much more nochem. But in the way they argued. But what I want to get across is that this is a highly competitive, fluid environment. You can't rest on your laurels. If one day, you know, you didn't sleep well last night and you were sleeping during shir, boom, you get demoted. Imagine the pressure that every Talmud would feel in that Beis Medrash. Can you imagine the pressure? You know, you ask a klotz kasha. It happens, you know, you ask a dumb question. Okay, so, you know, you're still okay, you just ask a dumb question. Here, boom, you're demoted. Everybody's changing their positions. It's like musical chairs. How good are you today? How bad are you today? Oh, good guy. Up, bad, back. Can you imagine the tension? I would think. I mean, at least I would feel one. Wouldn't you feel a tension in the base matter? Oh, he's changing your places. And by the way, who makes the decisions? I don't even know who makes the decisions. Yes?
Right. We don't really know if this happened with all the Talmudim. It could be just Rav Kahana never actually proven himself to Rav Yochanan. So the fact that he didn't... He was already put up in the first row and he didn't do anything, so then they started moving him back because he didn't prove himself yet. Could be, other Talmidim would be different.
It's possible, I take that. It's definitely possible. But nevertheless, I take your point and I think it's a good point. Nevertheless, it's clearly a dynamic structure. It's not your set. I mean, give him a week. Give him a day. It's like a minute, 5 minutes. Oh, no, back. It's like, even if you're right, it's still a very dynamic and very tight thing, tension. Whose shir are you in?
Our Salvation.
So what would it be like? Imagine, you know, wherever shir you're in, imagine your Rebbe did this. too. She came in at 9:30 today, back row. You know, a little late to see her. Oh, dumb question, back row. Oh, great question. Come on up front. You know, sit in front of him. I mean, would you imagine?
I think it would drive most of us crazy.
Yeah, I think it probably would. Which, by the way, tells you something about, you know, why is it, this is maybe totally conjecture, but there is a Jewish intellectual tradition of combativeness, you know, from Jews, not from Jews, lawyers, you know, they're all Jews. And this goes back to, I think, millennia, to this tradition of the way in which Jews learned in yeshivas and the super competitive, very argumentative kind of model. You see that in this yeshiva. Nobody's
greatness.
What's that?
Competition.
Exactly. I think that's why they. That's exactly correct. I think that's why they did. You're constantly forced to be at your best. Well, so it'll be very tense.
I mean, survival of the fittest. Jews. How we? You know.
Exactly.
Last,
no, Miles is making a very good point.
And these are the torchbearers of the Messiah.
Exactly. Miles is making a great point, and I was going to make that point. There's
a
reason
day.
For this.
You can't have a bad day.
Yeah, it's you are forced to constantly be at your best.
Capitalism of society.
Yeah, exactly. You're forced to imagine how you constantly steiging. You can't let up. You need to grow.
You're not going to class.
Yeah, you know. Imagine. Right, it was imaginative, constantly forcing them to be their best. And these were the greats. They became the greats. So there's a brilliant logic to this. Okay. Should I stop now, or what do you say? It's 9:35. It's one possible stopping point, but we could stop a little bit later. You know, I'll let me do another two or three lines, and then we'll stop. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So Amalei Rabbi Yochanan L'Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Arish Amart Naaseh Shual, this lion that you told me about has become a mere fox. That was a kind of not nice, I mean, one could argue, and as the Agadah unfolds, that wasn't the generous thing Rabbi Yochanan would say about Rav Kana. Like, he's like knocking him. Now, I don't think Rav Kana heard him, but it was like, so I think that plays a role in what happens.
I mean, like a fox, though. Like a fox is still a predator. I mean, like if you want to lower someone down to like being docked, you say like a sheep or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess he's still, you know, foxes.
He tricked you into thinking he was smart.
Yes, yeah, right.
He tricked you into thinking he was something, but he's really not that. That's a fox, though.
Oh, good. I like that. Mendy, hear that? Say it loud so they get good tape.
It tricked you into thinking it was something when he was really not there.
Foxes are tricky, so he's really saying, that's great, I didn't think of that. He tricked him into thinking that you were great, but he's really just a trickster. He's not a real, you know, carnivorous animal. Yes?
Give me Chazal, like the dynamic of the lion versus the fox.
Yes, that's what, yeah, right. Yes, I think that's true. Okay, so in any case, as we'll see, he's going to need, I think, kapara for this. Well, so there's a whole, this whole how Rav Kana and Rav Yochanan work out their relationship is the thrust of the Agadah till later. But there's an issue that, I mean, one can see that this was, you know, maybe he was not as generous a comment as he would have made. Okay. Amar. Rav Kana, you think he's going to take this line down? Amar. It's so interesting. Yay, hey, Rava. Rav Kana says.
He said this in front of everyone that you're...
No, I imagine it was not Mavayishim, but Rabin, but I imagine it was a kind of... You were the one who told me he's Nari, you know. He's really not such a... You know, like this. He's really not such a Nari. Sure, kind of thing. Yeah, I'm sure he was not Mavayishim, but Rabin, Chas V'Shalom. Okay, so now Rav Kana has to respond. Remember, he's so aggressive. Yay, hey, Rava. Rav Kana says. May it be Hashem's will, Dahane... Sheva Dare Lehavu Chiluf Sheva Shnin, the Amali Rav. Rav told me to be quiet for 7 years. May each of these demotions be the equivalent of a year of silence. So you can imagine, I can imagine, Rav Kahana's inner struggle. Like here he's been demoted. He's brilliant. He's an incredible Talmud Chacham. And they're shoving him into the back. He has to keep his mouth shut. Imagine the inner struggle. He has his Rebbe's instructions, right? Be quiet. But he also has this incredible need to speak up and to share his Torah and to ask questions. Now, notice, by the way, that his Rebbe was not gozer on him. It's worth, I mean, I've seen some of Farshim make this point. His Rebbe didn't issue a gezeirah. He said, you know, it's smart for you to do this because they'll kill you. That's not the same thing as Rebbe paskening a shaila for a Talmud, saying you must do this. So Rav was careful in the way he put what he put to Rav Kahana, not forcing him, not being gozer on him. Rav Kahana therefore felt maybe a little bit of leeway, and as he's internally struggling with this, he said, I suffered enough. A year of silence for the average person is like a demotion in Dara for me.
We have a Masara that Hashem shortened the Sheba of Mitzrayim because of the intensity of it. So you could say something similar here.
Right. I think what's really saying is that the restraint that he had to show for being silent, each generation is the equivalent of a year of silence for everybody else. I suffered enough. This is a huge sacrifice for me to do all these demotions to be keep silent and not ask all the kashas that I have. So he noticed by the 7 years, seven rows, 7-7 is a correlation there. And notice he uses tefillah, Yehei Rava. He's struggling with it. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yehei Rava, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please accept this. Or maybe he's saying it to his Rebbe, but it's a tefillah. So he's struggling with this. But here's how it continues. Kam Akare. He gets up. Amalei, he says, Nedar Marbaresha. Let's start from the beginning. Okay? Amar Shmaitza, Bigshe. Asked Reverend Yochanan taught his teaching again. Asked his Kasha. Ukme, eventually, the Darakama, they moved him one row up. Amar Shmaitza, Bigshe. He taught something, another teaching, asked another Kasha. So he keeps on getting promoted. Now look what happens, the most astonishing thing. Rav Yochanan have a Yosef Asheva Bistarki. Rav Yochanan was sitting on seven cushions. Sitting on seven cushions. I think he's like the Rosh Hashiva. You know, this is a Persian thing in Bavel, Babylonia. They kind of sat on these Persian cushions.
Aren't they in Eretz Yisrael?
Yes, but it's the Persian period in Eretz Yisrael. So they Shofel Echada Bistarka Mituse. Whatever Rav Kahana asked a question and got promoted, they pulled out a cushion from under Rav Yochanan.
Who's they?
Doesn't say. Talmid.
He pulled himself. I think he.
I don't know. Doesn't say. It seems like somebody else said it. Amar Shmaitza, the Ikshile, he said a teaching. Rav Kahana asked him a kasha. Ad Shofe Le Kula Bastarke Mituse. Ad Yosef Al Ara. Until they take away all of the cushions, and Rabbi Yochanan is now sitting on the ground.
It's a Talmidim, it's very
there is a zero-sum game between Rav Kahana and Rabbi Yochanan. The more Rav Kahana is elevated, the more Rabbi Yochanan is demoted. There is room for one, as it
is. Is this literal? Is it literal?
Very, very good question. So, very, very good question. So, is it possible that his Talmidim would actually do this?
Maybe it's like his ego.
It's like hard to believe that his Talmidim would do that, or even it's hard to believe that he would do that himself. So, the Maral says that it's a metaphor for dropping seven levels in the estimation of his Talmidim. They didn't literally pull the pillows, but when the Talmidim saw Rabbi Yochanan subject to this virulent attack by Rav Kahana, and he wasn't answering it, then their estimation of the morale. In general, morale is a non-literalist in reading Agadata. I follow in his derech sometimes when I often don't read Agadata non-literally. The morale, in this example, I think this is it's a good reading. It's hard for me to believe this is literal. Right. That they would literally pull out the pillow. Right. So, yes?
I have a big old caution now on, like, the seems to be the amount, saying, why would it be one each time? You think that he needs more respect when he's in the back row, and if he asks a good question in the front row, And you're like, oh, it's the fumble guy, he's the best. Okay, the back row guy, he would use like two cushions. The fumble guy would be like half a cushion.
I'm not sure I get what you're saying, though.
They like each cushion represents the level of respect.
Right.
So you think they can use more.
No, Rav kind of didn't get cushions. No. He just moved
no,
up right.
No, it's not a finish that they removed it when he was in the front row.
When he was in the back row. It,
like, it's, oh, like this is what's expected of him when he's in the front row
yeah.
to
yeah.
to ask a cushion.
When he's in the back okay. row, he should use more respect.
Yeah, I hear that. Okay, in any case, so we'll stop here. The next part of the Gemara takes up the personal interaction between Yochanan and Rav Kahana. So this is a natural place to stop. It's really amazing, I got it.